Good morning, and thanks for queuing up Offbeat Oregon du jour, the audio edition. So, did you hear the one about the crew of the shipwrecked schooner that was rescued by the crew of a railroad train? That's right. It was a small construction engine that was being used to build the South Jetty, which is at the mouth of the Columbia River. It was being built to protect the Columbia River for ships. Well, one off-course sailing ship crashed into it, so construction crews that were working on the jetty chugged to the rescue. I'll tell you the story in a minute, but first let me introduce myself. My name's Finn J.D. John, and I do a weekly newspaper column called Offbeat Oregon History. The column got started in 2008. Today it runs in about a dozen community newspapers around the state. It tells the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghaied sailors and Skid Row bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. This RSS feed brings you one of our archive columns every morning in your choice of text and pictures or audio-only formats. Of course, you're listening to the audio-only one right now. If you want the text one, it's at ofor.us/t. So today's episode about the crew of the shipwrecked schooner. I'll start reading it now. One stormy morning off the North Oregon coast, probably for the first and only time in history, the entire crew of a shipwrecked schooner was rescued with a railroad train. Here's the full story. A little after 8 a.m. on January 13, 1912, the four-masted schooner Admiral was on a broad reach through heavy seas, the usual southwest wind at her back, heading for her home port of Gray's Harbor. Captain Joseph Bender was having breakfast with his wife and their four-year-old son when he heard a terrified yell from the lookout. At least, I think it was a terrified yell. I can't imagine any other kind of yell that would come from the lookout when the lookout was yelling the words, "Breakers ahead!" Bender, a seasoned mariner, was not one to linger over eggs and bacon when an alarm like that has been sounded. He leaped to his feet and sprinted for the forecastle. The ship was supposed to be 60 miles off the coast, but of course, she wasn't. The southwest wind quarters toward the shore, and as sailors know well, it's very easy to fall off the wind when on a broad reach. The Admiral had apparently done so, and was now heading straight for a jagged line of rocks reaching out from the mouth of the Columbia River, the almost completed South Jetty. The helm was already hard over. And ironically, if the lookout had spotted the breakers 100 feet earlier, the ship would probably have cleared the jetty by a whisker and been tacking for the open sea. But that's not what happened. There was a railroad trestle running along the top of the jetty for the railroad that was being used to build and maintain it, and this is what the Admiral fetched up on. Striking by an amazing piece of luck, the only spot in the line in which the rocky riprap had yet to be filled in around it. The 683-ton ship smashed into the standing bents, which are the upright posts, of the railroad trestle, snapping them off, and then impaled itself on their stumps. The railroad ties, along with spikes and other hardware, flew everywhere. Luckily, nobody was hit. The steel rails hanging out in space tore rigging away, and the whole time, I forgot to mention this, the heavy seas and 70-mile-an-hour winds were thrashing the big ship around. Yep, this all happened in the middle of a gale. It seems like stuff like this never happens on a calm day. Then a massive wave picked the ship up off the posts and jammed it, stern first, into the gap in the jetty. Meanwhile, the members of the jetty work crew were getting ready for another day. They had just decided the weather was too heavy for work on the jetty when the telephone rang. It was Oscar Wicklund from the Point Adams Life Station on the south side of the mouth of the Columbia. The Cape D, that's Cape Disappointment, Cape D Life Station on the Washington side had picked up a wireless signal from a steamship sailing for the bar, reporting that a foremaster was in trouble on the jetty. Well, as luck would have it, an hour or so earlier, jetty foreman and future Astoria Mayor J.C. Tenbrook had asked an engineer named O'Neill to build up steam in engine number 4. A tiny 042 construction engine about the size of a small Class C motorhome to do some work in the yard. 042, by the way, refers to the wheel configuration on these steam locomotives. 0 small leading wheels, 4 large drive wheels, and 2 small trailing wheels. But back to our story. By the time Wicklund got there, the 042 was ready to go, and minutes later the little engine was on its way out of the yard and onto the jetty with the 4 of them stuffed into the cabin. The seas were huge, As they pounded the jetty below, they threw huge arcs of foamy spray over the little engine, whose hot boiler turned them into clouds of steam, making it even harder to see. The tracks trembled with each impact, and the crew, Tenbrook, O'Neill, and Engineer Al Seifert, knew that a very large sailing ship had crashed into the line somewhere just ahead, so they were moving slowly, hoping for the best, and knowing it would be pretty easy to fall into the sea and die. Then O'Neill gave a sudden shout, and Seifert cut the power. There on the tracks in front of them was a man, kneeling on the railroad ties, clutching something large under his coat. It was First Mate Andy Anderson of the Admiral, shivering violently and hypothermic nearly to the point of no return, holding the captain's 4-year-old son under his coat. Anderson, unable to continue walking, may have been preparing to use the last of his fading body heat to keep the toddler alive in hopes that someone might find him. Instead, he found himself with the boy in the warm, crowded cabin of this tiny locomotive, which got even more crowded when the crew pulled cautiously forward and rescued the other 3 shivering people huddled near the broken end of the tracks, Captain Bender, his wife, and the ship's cook. But the others had clambered off the doomed ship on the opposite side of the gap in the line. Now they were stuck there, 200 feet away, unreachable. No problem. Wicklund, the professional rescuer, had a plan. If the survivors on the other side of the broken jetty could keep from freezing to death long enough for him to put it into effect. So Seifert put the little engine in reverse and puffed back along the tracks, more quickly now, since he knew the tracks behind him were good, to the construction shack. Wicklund's life station crew was waiting for them. Quickly they unloaded the shipwrecked 5, bundling them into the warm construction shack. Then they worked with furious haste to hook up 2 flat cars in front of the engine. On the flat cars, the rescuers loaded a Lyle gun, a short-barreled cannon made to shoot lifelines instead of cannonballs, and a breeches buoy, which is essentially a sling that hangs from a zip line. The Lyle gun easily reached the other side with its line. The breeches buoy was quickly prepared, and in short order the remaining 7 sailors got their turn to be crammed into the warm cab on their way to safety. Not one crew member died. Yet not one had the ghost of a chance of surviving without the help of that most unlikely of rescuers, a railroad train. Oddly enough, this entire time the railroad and rescue people had seen no trace of the Admiral. The seas had forced it through the gap in the jetty, all the way through, and badly damaged it wallowed around in the mouth of the Columbia, drifting toward Peacock Spit. An attempt to salvage it almost ended in tragedy when, just after a salvage crew had boarded the hulk, it capsized, throwing all 3 of them into the sea. Eventually it fetched up on Peacock Spit, and the sea pummeled it into pieces like so many vessels before and since. That's it for today. You can check out all the columns and subscribe to either RSS feed by going to www.offbeatoregon.com. Both of the Offbeat Oregon Du Jour feeds are optimized for smartphone use, but they work great on a computer or netbook, too. Everything here is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Well, thanks for listening, and drop me a line anytime at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon, especially if you're going to be in the Corvallis area and have time for a cup of coffee someday. Meanwhile, I'll be back tomorrow at around 6 a.m. with the next episode, so until then, happy trails!